what sort of challenges did the Seahawks defense present, and do you see similarities to what the Ravens did last season?
Yeah, obviously, you know, Mike's done a good job dating back to his Raven days, and you know, the way he calls the games, and you know, dating back to the Ravens, and even this year with those guys, they keep you on your toes. You know, got a lot of really good players on defense, guys that have made the Pro Bowl, and some of the better players in this league, and so he uses those guys very well within his scheme. You know, so we got to be on our P's and Q's. It's going to be a big one for us. Obviously, it starts today with, you know, first and second down and trying to, you know, master that plan right now. And then moving forward throughout the week, because the more, like, third downs and red zones and the situation gets, that's when, you know, they get better.
Jacoby Brissett yesterday discussing the Seahawks matchup. Mike McDonald from the Baltimore Ravens coaching tree. Defensive guy. Gerard Mayo from the esteemed Bill Belichick coaching tree.
He sure is.
Defensive
He's got a
guy.
Chance to be the greatest ever from the Belichick tree.
I mean,
decent chance.
If you were going to pick the greatest branch of the Belichick tree right now, Mayo's, I mean,
probably
it's,
Mayo.
It's a 1,000 winning percentage.
I think you'd have to give it to Bill O'Brien. I know those teams were never real threats, but he at least got the Texans to the playoffs.
I hated watching those teams.
No, I don't like them either, but who are you comparing him against?
Do you count Vrabel?
I do not.
Why?
You have to coach for him.
Why?
Because you're on the coaching tree.
Yeah, but
not a player.
But he played for Bill.
Vrabel's actually more in like the Urban Meyer tree than he would be for the.
I
don't think players count. So is Cliff Kingsbury and Kevin O'Connell in his tree?
Like, they, but no. They did they ever play for him?
Yeah.
No.
They were on the team.
They never played a game.
They were on the team.
They never played a game.
They were in the locker room.
Vrabel was here for 8 years or whatever.
Yeah, I don't
it was.
Think that counts. I don't think so.
Okay,
if so I can, any former player,
if
that
I can count him,
guys,
if I can count him, it's Vrabel. But if I can't,
yeah, you can't.
I mean, it's either probably Bill O'Brien,
Brian Flores, but no, that ended up going up in smoke.
No, it's Mayo.
It's Gerard Mayo.
Right now, today,
it's not McDaniels. It's not Patricia. It's not Mangini. It's not Weiss.
Nope,
it's not
nope,
Cornell.
Nope.
Who else you got? Yeah, no, it's probably it.
Yeah, Mayo.
Yeah,
sorry. All right, one game in, it's Mayo.
There you go. Congratulations.
Good job, Gerard. Yep. Credit all around.
Uh-huh.
617-779-7937. You can jump in on anything we've touched on. Robert Kraft, his Hall of Fame candidacy. Why is that story coming out now when it could have come out any time in the last decade? We got to the Patriots and Seahawks this weekend, which we'll get back into. What do they need to score? What's the game plan against this team? And how do they unlock the passing game? Again, on the phones at 617-779-7937. Are defensive coaches making a bit of a comeback in
I think
the
a
NFL?
Little bit, believe it or not, because I'm very pro-offensive
Same.
Coach. I wanted an offensive coach.
Same.
When they went with Gerard Mayo, I was like, all right, I'll give him a chance, but I was disappointed. I wanted a Sean McVay, Mike McDaniel, even Matt LaFleur, like that whole Kyle Shanahan thing. That's what I want. That's those are the guys that I was interested in. Like Zach Robinson, they were interviewing him to be offensive coordinator. I was like, just make him the head coach.
Yeah.
Like guys like that. But I think there has been a little bit of a pushback. You see some of the rookie coaches this year, including the two that are playing in Foxborough. And I crunched the numbers. So this is Rich Keefe stats and info. This
really?
May not be 100%.
This is unbenounced to me. This is number crunching
32,
from the Rich Keefe
yep,
stats and info.
Here come a lot of numbers, a lot of stats.
Okay, good.
Hopefully
good.
Everybody's sitting down.
Good.
32 NFL head coaches.
Uh-huh.
John Harbaugh, special teams guy. So
yeah.
You remove him.
Special team. I mean, fantasy. You count them together. I think you could add him to.
You think
defense.
He's defense?
Yeah, defense and special teams.
He's teams.
Yeah, but look at your fantasy team.
Right,
what is that? DST. Defense. I think you can count him on defense.
That's a good point. All right. So if you want to throw John Harbaugh onto the pile
I do.
Of defense,
I do to make this argument.
You,
yes.
What do you think the numbers are? How many offensive coaches with offensive backgrounds are head coaches versus how many defense?
I would guess, including Harbaugh, it's still only like 10.
He would be 14. That's crazy.
It's almost 50-50.
So
almost 50-50.
We're not there yet?
Yeah.
Almost 50-50. But if I was in charge, and now that, like, you just named, you know, like Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, Mike Vrabel were all defensive guys that just left, I thought maybe that would also sort of signify more of a changing of the guard. And with the success of McVay, even the old school guys like Andy Reid, like right now Andy Reid's the best coach in the NFL. It's offensive guys, especially when you're trying to develop these quarterbacks, and it's more important now than it ever was before. And yet, no, Seattle, New England, and many others said, we're going defense. You know, I was looking at this. Jonathan Gannon, recent hire from the Cardinals. Defense. D'Amico Ryans.
I was going to say, he's the obvious one from last year, right? D'Amico Ryans got him to the playoffs.
Raheem Morris this year with the Falcons. You know, that's a guy that had a crack at it before, had to go back to be a coordinator. Sean McDermott. for better or worse, defensive guy, Matt Eberflus with the Bears, Antonio Pierce with the Raiders, Dennis Allen, your guy, Robert Saleh, Mike Tomlin, Todd Bowles, Dan Quinn.
So Bowles is a good one. You know, when it comes to a team that way outperformed what we expected last year, the Bucs were a playoff team. The Bucs won a round last year, right? They beat Philly. Right. And so,
but the best teams in the league, I still think. So Chiefs are the best team, right? 49ers are right up there at the top. Who else? Eagles, you would say, are up there at the
Lions,
top.
Campbell.
Lions. Yeah, and Campbell's a weird one.
Yeah, I don't know if Campbell's the best coach.
Yeah, and he, I don't know, like, he was never an offensive coordinator, but he was a tight ends coach.
He was an offensive guy.
Interim guy. So, and he played tight end. So, like, he's an offensive type guy. But I know the Bengals weren't great this weekend, but just going into the year, Bengals, Cowboys, Lions, Packers, Chiefs, Rams, Dolphins, Eagles, 49ers. All have offensive coaches, and I would say are, what, 8 of the 10 Super Bowl contenders?
So here's what I might say. If you're going to hit it big, you probably need the offensive guy, right? And I do believe in that, but there is something refreshing about Mayo. And not that Bill wasn't a defensive guy. Like, you've had a defensive guy for 2 decades. But there is something refreshing about hearing different packaging of the messaging. It's all very similar, but he's younger and maybe it resonates more with players. And I do wonder how much some of these offensive guys resonate with the players. Like it makes sense. Antonio Pierce, Jerod Mayo, you know, guys like D'Amico Ryans, when it's like, hey, we're going to go out there, we're going to hit them. And you have this energy and this attitude that resonates with players, getting them to run through a brick wall, as opposed to, let's face it, none of us like the analytics in baseball or even basketball. Like, I get annoyed at the analytics guys. That's what a lot of these offensive guys are. They are analytics dorkwads. Like, who was the guy who coached the last couple of years? No, Brendan Staley.
Oh, Brendan
with
Staley.
All of this,
he was a defensive guy.
The Charger, was he a defensive guy?
Yeah, Staley's a defensive guy. He was a Division III defensive coordinator.
Well, then I strike that from the record. Because he was, like, the most analytically driven guy.
Yeah.
But a lot of these guys are wonky analytics. Hey, let's lean on the pass. Let's lean on going for it on fourth down. Go for it in the red zone. All these things, right? And I just wonder how much that connects to the defensive guys have a better chance of connecting to the players, is what I'm
probably
saying. Because quarterbacks are so separate. So I agree with you. If you're going to hit it big and you're going to play for Super Bowls and win championships, I still think the offensive guy works. But we're talking about raising the floor from being a basement team. If you're going to get to the middle of the pack and do it quickly, a defensive guy might be the safer bet.
Might be, yeah, if that's what you're shooting for, right? It's just not to be like the worst team in the league. Maybe you go with that. I just think, to boil it down, it is oversimplistic, but just developing the quarterback is the most important thing, and you do that with the offensive coach. Now, if he's a head coach like Mike McDaniel or Sean McVay, you can see it in the instant dividends. You can also have a really, really good offensive coordinator, and the job can get done that way. However, that guy then becomes the head coach in the league really soon. And I think Josh Allen, still very, very good, but took a step back, threw away more picks when Brian Daboll left. And I think his best years were probably under Brian Daboll. And should they have had, if Brian Daboll was the head coach instead of Sean McDermott, like, would they be better off? That's how I would run it. I would take the best offensive mind I can find, have him be my head coach, lock him in so you don't lose him. There's no fear of losing him.
Right.
And then you try to find maybe the Antonio Pierce, D'Amico Ryans, Jerod Mayo before they hit it big, have the former player as your defensive coordinator. And maybe you sort of get the best of both worlds. And if he gets another job, great. God bless him. But at least
find another ex-player.
At least I got my offensive guy, and hopefully he's in lockstep with the quarterback, because, you know, maybe I got to give Tua more credit. Maybe he would have been good with other people, but I feel like you have a chance with him being coached by Mike McDaniel. If Mike McDaniel was the OC there and left, and then they replaced him with somebody else, and now you're kind of going through the motions again, you're like, well, I got the defensive guy that doesn't really pay as close attention, I think his level of play would come down. So I think a team like the Dolphins kind of has the right mentality with how to do it.
Yeah, and look, I think McDaniel resonates with his players. You know, part of it is like his new Miami look. But
yeah, I mean, so many guys that are in their 30s that are coaching these teams now, too.
So I do think that there's an age thing for sure. But I am surprised about this with Mayo. And maybe it's just because they won a game. And maybe it's because we didn't see it coming. And I'm ignoring everything else. But it felt all offseason like they were a disaster. And they were disorganized. And the messaging was off. And you wondered how much players were really getting on board with Mayo. And then you heard the comments last week going into the game. You hear the comments coming out of the game, you know, running through a brick wall was going in. All these comments about the Hill, take him into deep water. Our conditioning was up. You hear all these things. I'm enjoying that aspect of Mayo a little more than I expected to. Like I thought Mayo would be popular with the media. I wondered how popular he would be in the locker room and how much guys would be pulling for him and on board with him. And I guess I'm surprised at that already with Jerod Mayo, because while players respected Bill, and who knows, maybe they liked him more than I give it credit for, I think that had gotten real stale.
Yeah.
And the time had come and the messaging had fallen on deaf ears. And I think just a new voice with some energy that's younger and can relate to players more, that's paying off more than I expected early.
Well, I think one of the keys, too, for these young defensive guys is you need to have a good defense. And so Matt Patricia gets the job with the Lions, and the defense sucked. It's like, well, you're the defense guy, so if we're actually going to be a defensive guy, bring him in. You need to fix the defense. And I think one of the reasons why Robert Saleh is going to end up getting fired from New York is like, wait a minute, at least like when Rex Ryan was here, the defenses were nasty. And could he develop a quarterback? Probably not.
Well, the Jets defense was good last year, no?
I don't think as good as like it should be with Robert Saleh. Okay. I know it's just one game, but they have a lot of talent. Like I think the defense should be even better than it is. And it's only one game as well. But Jerod Mayo comes in, and not only does it not look like there's a drop-off from Bill Belichick's defenses, but there might be a chance that the defense is a little bit better. And that's the thing. Like, if you're going to take that chance, right? If you're going to bring in Matt Eberflus to be your head coach, you got to have a really good defense.
Right.
Like, that at least goes along with it. And maybe you can kind of carry an average or below average offense along for a little bit of a ride.
So, look, it's one weekend. We're possibly overreacting. But our defensive coach is making a bit of a comeback. Todd Bowles won last year with Tampa Bay. They won a round in the postseason. They were a playoff team. They won last week. You know, D'Amico Ryan's in his first year. They won double-digit games. They won a round in the postseason. They started last week with a win. Mayo started with a win. The guy on the other side, Mike McDonald, who you're going against, started with a victory.
By the way, last year, Jets, I didn't realize it was this bad. Points allowed was – oh, no, I was looking at the offense. They were 12th. So they were like –
That's lower than I would have thought.
Fair, but like outside the top 10. And then you have Robert Saleh. So you're thinking like, well, you kind of punted on the offensive coach and you went with him. And I mean, I don't know. I don't think like his first year, they were horrible. He improved them a lot. In 2022, they were better.
Okay.
Maybe that's what you're thinking of. And then last year was kind of average.
Yeah, I would have expected better than 12th in points against for that defense.
Yep.
So our defensive coach is making a comeback. And is it another sign that Robert Kraft might be onto something with this Jerod Mayo hire? Look, they lose to Seattle, I'm going to feel a lot differently.
Yeah.
They start 1-3 going into week 5. I'm going to be calling for Drake May, and I'm going to be wondering if they're on to anything with Jerod Mayo. But 1 week in, it's gone a lot better than I expected, and I'm impressed with what I'm hearing coming out of the locker room. 617-779-7937. We have misleading. We'll revisit something from the Greg Hill Show earlier today that jumped out to us. Billy Lanny with all the latest in trending, and we'll get to Thursday Night Football. Big game, not just for the Bills and Dolphins tonight.
No.
Big game for the Patriots and the AFC East.
The division.
Let's
go.
Maybe up for grabs. Let's get to it. Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. It's Patriots and Seahawks on Sunday. You see who the Patriots just announced as the keeper of the light?
I literally just came across the news desk. Patriots Media Relations just issued a press release.
Ooh.
So,
Do I have that? Oh, I do have that.
Yeah. Oh, did you see it on Twitter?
No, I saw the Patriots tweeted out in the last 10 minutes or so. Yeah, they've now put out a press release.
So to perform the keeper of the light duties, which I guess they're going to do this again this year. Who didn't Kenny Chesney do it last year?
Yeah, they
lighthouse guy.
Yep, Kenny Chesney was one.
Tom Brady, Chesney.
Yeah, Brady did the opener.
Yep.
Yeah, Bon Jovi saving lives. By the way.
Yeah, that's
see
impressive.
That?
I didn't see it. You told me about that though.
Yeah.
He was out on the
somebody ready
bridge?
To jump off a bridge in Nashville. And he talked him down off the bridge. I mean, and I've taken a lot of shots at Bon Jovi, but
no,
I mean, tremendous work by him. I didn't realize he was capable of such
it's
a
incredible.
Thing.
Incredible.
But yeah, he was keeper of the light. Kenny Chesney, keeper of the light.
Who would be the best keeper of the light possible?
Well, Brady.
Tom Brady would be?
Oh, like for this game specifically or just period?
For the game against Seattle.
Oh.
You think like Cassius Marsh?
I think they have it. I think the Patriots actually knocked
this is the best one?
It's hard to do much better.
All right, who is it?
Malcolm Butler.
What?
What do you mean what?
How is he? I still don't understand. Not to go back to the whole thing, but
no,
he
right
signed here,
yeah.
which was insane to me, and then never played. He got hurt and then was released or an injury designation or whatever. And now he's coming back to be the keeper of the light. Now, people love him here. He is.
They should.
We're all convinced they would have won another Super Bowl had he just played. Yeah. So, like, whether that's true or not, we all assume that to be the case. So he is very, very well liked. I just don't know why he would give the Patriots the time of day.
Oh, fair. I
that's all I'm saying.
Well, why do you think?
He's intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Unbelievable.
Unreal,
in fact.
Why do you think? Why do you think he plays nice with the Patriots?
Bag of cash.
They play nice with him.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're taking care of him, obviously.
It's just Belichick. No, but he re-signed. Like, that throws anybody's wild goose theories as to what happened, like, out the window, the fact that he came back here.
Does it?
Kinda. Mm. How bad could it have been if he came back here?
Well,
it also proves that Belichick should have played him. Not just go on down this whole Malcolm Butler rabbit hole.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're not doing that. I spent years on this. But him coming back is the most bizarre thing of the whole scenario. Like, him getting benched is obviously wrong, and then goes somewhere else. And then Mike Vrabel signs him, doesn't play all that well in Tennessee, but got money, so good for him. And then he comes back? Wow. Obviously, he shouldn't have been benched. Yeah. If you're able to re-sign the guy, my take at the time if he wasn't in prison, he should have played him.
Seriously, never should have been benched, obviously. Yeah. And even if there was bad blood and animosity between he and Bill, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Even if there was, okay, fine.
Play him.
Well, and also,
Travis Kelce almost punched out Andy Reid on the sideline during the Super Bowl. He went right back out there.
And maybe, you know, maybe there's certain things on both sides people didn't want getting out. So the best thing to do is keep it quiet, and we'll pay you. You keep quiet. And
the dynasty couldn't unearth it. Nobody's unearthed it.
This is more evidence that, yeah, they're all moving on, and Malcolm Butler, keeper of the light.
It is fitting that it's against Seattle, obviously.
It's perfect. But if you are a Seattle fan and you have to watch, now it's a guarantee. You're probably going to see it anyway. But it's a guarantee. You're going to see that pick. You're going to see that highlight. It's going to get thrown in your face. Wow. You got Pete Carroll chomping on his gum like a moron.
Worst decision. All right, ready?
You have Marshawn Lynch like standing on the sidelines laughing at everybody. You have the defense all hating Russell Wilson, who is still modern day standing around in his pads with his eye black on like a loser. And so you get all that thrown back in you. This guarantees it. Great choice by the Patriots.
Yeah, it is. Worst coaching decision, not running the ball with Marshawn Lynch or not playing Malcolm Butler. Which one would you be more upset about, as a Patriots fan, Bill, or as a Seahawks fan?
It's benching Butler.
See, I think one play, I blame Pete more. I think that's worse. Because Marshawn Lynch would have scored a touchdown the very next play if he handed
maybe,
him the ball.
But it's a one-off. Like the fact
exactly, it's a one-off, whereas the Butler thing is all game long. You don't know. They might have still lost that game.
Okay, but that's what makes it a worse decision. All game, they're watching getting carved up, and they're like,
Nick
still
Foles,
no.
Good quarterback, though.
Still no.
Good quarterback.
Still no. Like, that's what makes it worse. The amount of opportunities they had to change their mind makes it worse. One is, boom, snap judgment, I made the wrong decision.
Why would you throw the ball?
Okay, it is stupid.
That's real bad.
It is stupid. They're two of the stupidest decisions of all time.
Like in a four-year span.
I'm not saying one's good. I'm saying which one's worse.
No, that's fine.
Benching Butler.
I just, when you go back and watch that game, so Marshawn Lynch had a good run. He got tackled at whatever the two-yard line was. And then they show him in the backfield, and he always looked like such a badass, Marshawn Lynch. He looked like one of the hardest guys.
Every time I watch the Amazon Prime commercial, I'm like, what a badass.
But he's standing behind Russell Wilson. He's got like his hands on his knees. He's got the tinted shield. And you're like, this guy is going to run it through the back of the end zone if they hand him the ball. And then they're like, nope, let's try to mix it into like Ricardo Lockett or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, no, do that. So I maintain I think that's the best Super Bowl ever played.
I
was about to say it's my favorite. I guess that's still 36.
Mine's definitely the Rams, Greg Show on turf, Ty Law pick six. But
this
Seattle game was a great game.
And what that Super Bowl, it was a great game.
Yeah.
And it was two tremendous teams, right? The Patriots went on to win three Super Bowls with that group. Seattle was about to win back-to-back.
Yeah, I mean, derailed a potential dynasty.
Correct. Yep. And so, like, those were great teams going back and forth at one another. It was a back and forth fourth quarter, maybe not a back and forth game. Tremendous fourth quarter.
No, but there was a lot of stressful plays. Like, that was a serious game.
It's, you know, it's Super Bowl winning coaches on both sides, Super Bowl winning quarterbacks on both sides. Yep. Like, it's just, it was a tremendous amount of talent on both sides.
A lot of Hall of Famers. It'll be interesting to see how many Hall of Famers come out of that game.
You know, so, like, it was a great, great game. It was great, great all-time teams, I think, going back and forth.
Yeah.
And what that Super Bowl represented, it was the second wave. Like, we were talking about this yesterday. Robert Kraft was campaigning since 2012.
Yeah, they hadn't won a Super Bowl in 10 years.
That he wants to be in the Hall of Fame. They still only had the three, only.
Well, yeah, right.
They still only had the three. And it had been a decade since they broke through. And that's how they broke through. I think it's the best Super Bowl ever played.
And it also killed off some of the questions about Brady.
100%.
You know, like, all that stuff.
Brady, it shut people up about Spygate.
Yep.
You know, we had to open it up again with Deflategate, but, you know, but it shut people up about one of them anyways. Mm-hmm. And even in real time, it shut people up about Deflategate to a degree.
I think it did.
Right?
Yeah, because so you're like, all right, well, this is clearly on the up and up.
So,
and
they so you shut people up about two cheating scandals as much as you could.
Yeah, well, right.
And so, yeah, I think it was a great, great Super Bowl. It's right there neck and neck for my favorite Patriots Super Bowl with Super Bowl 36.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. That they weren't, you know, big underdogs like they were against the Rams. I sort of, and it's the first one, and just the greatest show on turf, but it's also Legion of Boom. Like, first of all, the nicknames need to come back. Any more good nicknames?
Yeah.
Those are two of the best. But, yes, an incredible fourth quarter and then one of the greatest plays. Like, if you're a Seattle fan, you're saying it's the worst decision ever made. If you're a Patriots fan, you're like, that's the greatest play in Super Bowl history. Malcolm Butler coming up with the interception.
Pete, we're already getting 28-3, best Super Bowl.
Nah.
So, I think...
It's the Falcons.
It's also the greatest comeback ever.
Yes.
Like, statistically, and just watching it, and it's unbelievable. And it's reason number 10,100 to stick with a Tom Brady game and never rule him out. But the actual game, start to finish, the Seattle game is
and
a superior
game. And it's the Falcons.
It's the Falcons.
It's Kyle Shanahan, who, as we came to find out, they lose every
Super Bowl. Matt
Ryan. Thank you.
Dan Quinn. Losers.
Like, to me, that's why I give Seattle a leg up, because they were the defending champs, and they were on their way to winning back-to-back.
And that really blew them up. Like, them losing that game.
Oh,
now the defense, Richard Sherman's mom hates Pete Carroll. Like, remember, it became like, it was over.
Yeah.
When that happened, it was over for them. I think they squeezed out a few more playoff runs, maybe, but like, they weren't, that could have been back
to back. The players all hated, they started to hate Pete Carroll, they started to hate Russell Wilson. Like, that was the downfall of Russell Wilson.
Yep.
And so, if you're just tuning in, why are we talking about a Super Bowl from a decade ago? Malcolm Butler will be the keeper of the light. If you're unfamiliar with what that is, the stupid lighthouse there, he'll go up there and ring the bell before the game.
How about this? More than 20 former teammates will be there as well.
From that team.
For a reunion of that Super Bowl team.
So I was just going to say this. I also think that 2014 team is a very underappreciated Patriots all-time team.
Insane. So that might be their best defense of the last, since 04, maybe.
Yeah, right. Agreed. Yeah, yeah. And so, and you think that team had Chandler Jones. That team had, you know,
Butler, Jones, Hightower, Darrell Revis, Brandon Browner.
Right, but you think about some of the guys who won multiple titles. Maybe you forget about Chandler. He was on that team.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so that was a stacked, stacked team. Revis, as you just said, for
they
a one-off.
Still had Collins, right?
So I think, yes, Jamie Collins is another good one. So I think when you discuss the greatest Patriots teams of all time, I would argue 04. I get it if you want to argue 07. I personally wouldn't, but I get it. To me, 14 is right there with those teams.
16, they had a better regular season record, and they ranked higher both offensively and defensively.
And 16, they won without Gronk.
Right.
Gronk was hurt.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was like Martellus Bennett in the Super Bowl.
Well, then it's funny, because then you go to 17, where they have Gronk, but they don't have Edelman, which is a big feather in the cap to Edelman. It was almost like he was a more important go-to guy, even though Gronk is the greatest tight end of all time. It was like the team, then Brady kind of needed Edelman more than Gronk in a crazy way.
Yeah, and so look, it's 10 years on from that Super Bowl, and Malcolm Butler will be there. 617-779-7937, our buddy JP's in North Providence. Go ahead, JP, you like this move?
Jones, it would be funny if the last minute they bench Butler and they bring somebody else up to do it. That would be outstanding.
That would be good.
So... Jones, I got a great idea for the keeper, and then I got a tough question. I'm going with William Dafoe. He was in the lighthouse, and he could fly around it as the Green Goblin. That would be pretty cool, shining some lights up there.
That's true. That's
and
good.
My tough question, Jones, who is the best out of the Jones coaching broadcast tree? Is it Keith, Cattles, or Arkin? It's a tough question, Jones.
Ooh, the Jones tree.
Well, I'm very that's biased. Don't shortchange Mego. I'm very biased on this, but I would argue for Rich Keith.
That's very kind.
Yeah. Ask me, you know, after 2 o'clock and maybe I would answer differently.
It could change. It could change.
But that's a good question by him. I never saw The Lighthouse.
Neither did I. It's a Robert Eggers movie where it's Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe just like screaming at each other, going mad.
In a lighthouse.
Apparently it's very good.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe in another weird accent screaming at Robert Pattinson.
Willem Dafoe was also in the Beetlejuice movie that just came out.
Nice.
He's good in it.
Wow.
He's good in everything, Willem Dafoe. Boondock Saints.
I was just going to say Boondock Saints.
Boondock
just,
Saints.
You know, just replaying the the classical music.
The guy was good.
Did they reenact that on Always Sunny, I think. Dennis reenacted that.
I think that sounds right.
Yes.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's Willem Dafoe.
That's a timeless classic.
It is. 617-779-7937. They bench Malcolm Butler from the Keeper of the Light.
Not bad. Well, I love how
who were those bum-ass corners that played in that Super Bowl?
Who were the guy? Who was the guy?
Oh, Jordan Richards.
Johnson Bademosi.
Jordan Richards.
Yeah, you're right, Nick. That was one.
He's going to replace Malcolm Butler.
Yeah.
I think Eric Rowe played, but he had a good game, right? There's something like that.
Doubtful.
Maybe not.
I don't think so.
I don't know if anybody had a good game.
Yeah,
really,
me neither.
As it turns
out, they gave up a billion points to Nick Foles.
No, but it is funny how they're like, they announce Malcolm Butler as this keeper of the light. You're like, hey, it's the 10-year anniversary of that team, and what a play. But, like, is that the first thought now of Malcolm Butler? Sadly,
no.
The greatest play in Super Bowl history for Patriots fans, it's not the first thought.
It's not.
And that's insane.
That is. Yeah, like, I guess I hadn't thought about it that way, but yes.
It's one of the greatest plays in football history. And when you hear Malcolm Butler, my first thought is, like, I wish he played in that Eagles game. Like, ridiculous.
Yeah. Right. He won you a Super Bowl, and then if he played in a second, he might have won you that, too. 617-779-7937. Again, just hot off the presses. Patriots will have Malcolm Butler, which is a great move. I rarely applaud the Patriots, but great move. He's going to be keeper of the light leading into that game against the Seahawks. We have Thursday Night Football tonight, Keith.
Yes, we do.
Big game for the division.
Oh, yeah. Division's on the line.
Which maybe is up for grabs for the Patriots, as we discussed earlier this week.
Up for grabs, period. For the Patriots, I would say no.
It's up for grabs, you agree with. Up for grabs, dot, dot, dot,
for
the Patriots.
As you said,
yes.
I think it's wide open with the other three teams. I'm very happy about the Patriots' start, but I think as the season goes on, I think Miami, the Jets, even though they look bad week one, and the Bills, I think it's completely up for grabs. I think the idea that there was going to be like a stranglehold with Josh Allen and the Bills, I think that's not happening. Like, I think, and even last year, didn't it look like Miami, and then there was like at the end.
Yeah, then December happened.
So
Frost hit the ground, and next thing you know, the Dolphins can't play anymore.
Exactly. So maybe the important start is bigger for the big start is more important for the Miami Dolphins. We'll see. But yeah, it's two teams with young quarterbacks that could be standing in the way. You hope to see like a Drake May rivalry with Josh Allen and with Tua for like many years to come. Like, that's what you're hoping for. But no, I think these two teams playing, it also has the chance to be a really entertaining game too.
No, it's a good, if you care about these things, it's a good over-under tonight, 48, 48 and a half, something like that.
It's like 10 points higher than the Patriots game.
Vegas expects some points. I like the Bills. I feel like the Bills match up very well against Miami. This is anecdotal, but I feel like the Bills match up very well against Miami. Josh Allen has big games against everybody, but specifically against that team on the ground through the air. So I like the Bills tonight on the money line. I think they win the game. I definitely take them with the points. Do you think these teams can compete with Kansas City, keep up with the Chiefs?
Man, I thought, you know, Josh Allen would be one of the teams kind of standing in the way, but I feel like as the time has gone on, the Chiefs might have gotten a little bit better. Like, I didn't think Worthy was going to be as good. You know, he had, what, 3 touches, 2 touchdowns in his first ever game?
Yeah.
So if the Chiefs got a little bit better, then they just won the Super Bowl, and I thought they were kind of undermanned. Like, they didn't have a whole lot for Mahomes to throw to other than Kelsey, and they still won the Super Bowl. So I feel like the Chiefs have gotten a little bit better, and I think the Bills have gotten a little bit worse. Like, losing Steph Diggs, I think, is massive. And even if Steph Diggs was on the way down, okay, you're still losing that production. You're still losing him being the go-to guy. I mean, there were games that I bet Diggs got 2/3 of the targets. maybe higher. Like,
early
75% of the targets.
Yeah.
Like, he was his go-to guy. So maybe Keon Coleman will turn into that. But I just think they're making it way harder on Josh Allen. Like, Patrick Mahomes proved he doesn't need all pros around him to win. Josh Allen's never actually won the whole thing. So I feel like you should be in a spot where you're still adding more talent to him and not taking it away. So I actually like the Dolphins for the season more than I like the Bills. And I think the Dolphins, like, head-to-head, Tua versus Mahomes, I'd have a really hard time taking the Dolphins in that one. I think they're going to be good. I think they are going to be a playoff team. They're as entertaining as anybody because they're the fastest team across the board. But I don't think either one of these teams beats the Chiefs.
If you remember, that playoff matchup last year was frigid, Dolphins and Chiefs, and it wasn't competitive. And that's just the thing the Dolphins are going to have to deal with. Look, I wouldn't trust Miami. Offensively, they can keep up with them.
Yep.
I wouldn't trust Miami in that scenario either. I've seen Josh Allen do it. I've seen Josh Allen go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. I think the Bills can. And I was mildly encouraged after their slow start, breaking in all these various receivers. Keon Coleman, rookie.
He had like 51 yards, I think.
You know, Khalil Shakir had a good finish to the year last year when Diggs was getting phased out. We'll see if they can get more out of Dalton Kincaid. I was mildly encouraged, despite a slow start, that Allen started to work in some of those new guys. So I think the Bills can keep up. I'm more skeptical about Miami. But you can jump in on the Patriots-related storylines Thursday Night Football tonight. Should they be watching? One of those teams is losing. The other one is going to be tied with them atop the division at 2-0.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's how I look at it.
I mean, that's true. I mean, for at least 2 days, you're, not in fourth or third place in the division. You're sitting right there. But, this is an interesting matchup, and it all comes down to, like, tiebreakers and everything else by the end of the year. I think these two teams could have similar-ish records. And this is also, you got the offensive coach versus the defensive coach, something that we were sort of highlighting, how more defensive coaches in the league than you thought.
Yeah.
And Sean McDermott's one of those guys that's been at it for a little while, and you wonder, like, is his defense good enough? Right? Like, Mike McDaniel seems to be keeping up his end of the bargain with the offense and the high-flying offense. Like, he is as advertised. He gets to Miami, they give him some good receivers, and they're lighting the world on fire. Sean McDermott, though, with his defense, like, I don't know.
Gotten away from it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Gotten away from it a little bit. So you can jump in on that. 617-779-7937. Meanwhile, Alex Van Pelt just wrapped up speaking to the media. I believe we're talking to Alex Van Pelt tomorrow. Is that correct?
AVP makes his coordinator debut on Jones and Keefe.
AVP, we're going to be getting the coordinators all year. We were told it was going to be a Tuesday. Turns out it's a Friday.
It's all right. Hot route. Called an audible on us. It's all right.
Hot route.
That's okay.
Hot route. We got Alex Van Pelt tomorrow on the show. And so I'm just looking through some of what he said today. Drake May, he was very complimentary of.
Good.
He also said this about Jacoby Brissett.
All
and
right.
I'm sensing a theme with the coaching staff.
Oh, boy.
Jacoby played within himself.
I like that.
Good. There were a couple of throws I know he'd want back.
Oh, boy.
Hunter Henry won in the end zone. Sure.
Yep.
For the most part, I thought he put us in position to win the game. He knew we were going to win. And he played to that, meaning we didn't ask him to play outside of himself.
No.
We asked
stay
him to do
yourself.
This. Stay very, the man inside me. Stay very much with that. That was Tobias Funke's book.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Stay within yourself. Don't do him too much. Between Gerard Mayo and Alex Van Pelt now, there is a little bit of like, hey, there's some throws you want back. Put the film on. There were receivers that were open. And oh, by the way, we like what we see out of Drake May. I just wonder how thrilled they are with Jacoby Brissett. So mark that down. We'll get to your feedback here coming up. And you've heard of the leads on the Greg Hill Show. What jumped out this morning? We'll get to it next in Misleading.
It's time for Misleading.
You've heard the leads on the Greg Hill Show? You've heard these?
Of course I have.
I don't think they lead well.
Would you have gone with Shimes over yours?
Damn, I don't even remember what mine was, so.
On Jones and Keith.
I'm having trouble trying to sleep. Counting sheep, but running out. As time ticks by.
Real quick, you ever hear the version of this song off the Godzilla soundtrack?
No.
So the Matthew Broderick Godzilla, not any of the new Godzilla.
Yeah, no, it's just the one with the 90s. Where Puff Daddy.
The P. Diddy and Jimmy Page song.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. The Cashmere, no longer a PC to be talking about Puff Daddy these days.
No,
but
no.
That vehicle.
So that took all the headlines because that was on the same album, that was on the soundtrack, and everybody was talking about P. Diddy and Jimmy Page, and like, oh my God, what a collab. Well, Green Day was like, hey, how about this? What if we give you Brain Stew, one of their hits?
Yeah.
We'll just play the song, and then you guys can add Godzilla sound effects in the background.
Nice.
So all it is this song, and then it's. A city's getting destroyed. Large lizard monster going down the streets. Same song. Yep, 100%. So you listen to it in the car, and you're like, oh, you get the Godzilla version? Like, yeah.
Yeah, nice, man.
Sweet.
A giant sea monster screaming.
What was the song directly after Brain Stew? They were like A and B on the album?
Because
I like that second. That was the real like.
So Brain Stew's not on Dookie.
Dookie
is a hit parade.
No. Brain Stew is on.
It was all hits.
You're Nimrod.
Nimrod. So
is that right?
Nimrod.
Brain Stew was on Insomniac.
Insomniac.
That's what we said.
Yeah.
That one wasn't to me as strong an album, but I love Brain Stew. So I forget what the other album or the other song was.
Yeah, but it kicked in.
The one directly after it is Jaded.
That.
Maybe you're thinking of like a mix CD you made, and it's actually a completely different band, and
yeah,
it's
exactly
not even
at all. The Aerosmith Jaded.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of.
That's the one.
Nailed it.
Nah, there was a song right after Brain Stew that kicked in.
I bet. Well, they all kind of kick in. Green Day knew what they were doing.
Yeah, no, it's fair.
Nimrod. What do you say, Insomniac?
No, Dookie. Yeah, you're saying. And then they did like American Idiot, which or whatever, what people loved.
American Idiot was good.
Play the old stuff.
Yeah, no, American Idiot was good.
That was the first parental advisory CD that I ever bought.
Which was that?
Is that American Idiot?
American Idiot, yeah.
American Idiot got like way overplayed.
It was like 7 years old when it came out.
Good album, yeah. Though. It's a good concept.
So you remember that song, This Is the Time of Your Life?
So
that came out the year my sister graduated high school, and they played a montage to that, and they were like one of the first to do it.
Seinfeld did it.
Yeah. For the next 20 years, they played that song.
Satin Vitamin C.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Seinfeld on one of their, like, it wasn't
clip
the finale, but yeah, one of
shows.
Exactly, one of their clip shows, they had that. Exactly.
I remember that.
What a time.
Oh, my God.
What a time it was.
You're right.
So this is, by the way, is misleading.
Sure is.
Here on that Jones.
It's been misleading.
We threw a curveball there. Exceptionally misleading. So what happened today on the Greg Hill Show, Keith?
Well, something was unearthed, I guess, in the Boston Herald as it relates to Brockton High School.
Oh.
And some of the funds being spent.
Okay.
And we have some of it from the morning show as they discussed it.
Received a draft contract before he was hired that listed him as, quote, mentor and head football coach, unquote,
right,
at a salary of $100,000.
That is news to me. Let me get out my calculator, because somebody owes me some money. They owe me.
I can barely hear you over there.
Hold on.
I'm speechless. I just can't believe he fumbled that bag.
No. They owe me $85,000.
They
paid me $15,000 to do this.
So Brockton High School, I guess, is looking for money, or how they spent money and everything else. And in this article, it says that Jermaine Wiggins, who famously was at Brockton High as the head football coach for 1 year,
mm-hmm.
one season, one and done, Steve Wilkes,
yeah,
as it were.
Frank Reich's.
Yeah, sure. That type. Apparently paid him $100,000. To which he said, well, they owe me 85. And then he was like, I was paid $15,000.
He had to break out the calculator.
$100,000, like you and I were discussing this before. I don't know what high school football coaches make. I have no idea. $100,000, $15,000, do it for free, $200,000. I have no idea what they make.
So I said this.
I can't imagine.
Well.
Like, $100,000 does seem high to me.
Okay, but we're just talking about this. If you're at a prep school,
well, if you're like St. Thomas Aquinas down in Florida,
right,
like you're probably like getting paid like a college coach. But
yeah, but yeah, public
up here,
a public high school in the Northeast. You're not getting $100,000.
I don't think so.
And so I heard them talking about during the crossover, this was brought up. I guess the whoever wrote this story for the Boston Herald didn't reach out to either Brockton High School nor the superintendent, rather, nor Wiggy.
No, but they just kind of threw out the fact that he got $100,000.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I didn't.
You know what I heard? You know what I heard? You got $100,000. You know what?
Put it in the paper.
You know what I heard? They're eating their pets. I mean, that's basically what this story was.
Anywhere you go, pets are being eaten. But so $100,000. Wiggy's like, if I was getting paid $100,000, I'd still be coaching there.
Excellent.
Making it sound like it was his choice, which I'm not entirely sure is the case. But,
that's fine.
That's neither here nor there.
All right, $15,000. I'd coach some high school.
$15,000, you'd coach high school football?
Probably.
I don't know. It's a lot. It's a time commitment. Yeah, it's a time commitment. Yeah, practices, two-a-days.
Make some bets on my phone.
Would you be an offensive coach or a defensive coach?
Good question.
Yeah.
I like to fancy myself an offensive guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You'd be drawing up plays.
QB Waggle.
You and Shime drawing up a scheme.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear Shime wants to get his play into Gerard Mayo.
Yeah, what do you say? Is it big on the dagger concept?
Is that what he said?
I think it's what he said.
I didn't hear that. I did hear Mayo say, as long as it's a running play.
He's like, oh, is that what he said? I don't have any of those.
Yeah,
like Mike Leach's offense.
As long as it's
here.
A running play, you can run it.
Hot route! Yeah. Red seven!
Yeah, QB Waggle again, coach?
QB Waggle.
Run the play.
We do like a boot. Like I just want a big boot. Actually, that was one of Jacoby Brissett's most successful plays when he started his rookie year.
Yeah, yeah.
When Garoppolo was hurt. Remember, big boot around
Running wild.
Running wild against the Texans.
Running wild. Yeah, no, $15,000.
$15,000.
Take an extra $15,000. I'll sit there on my phone. Run it again, guys.
Okay.
make some bets.
Run it again.
I have to try hard.
Because that's the thing is how much of a year-long
commitment
is it? I
don't want to drive to Brockton every day. That's what I don't want to do.
You would have to do that.
Yeah, I don't need that.
And then
can I coach remote?
Well,
can I zoom in?
I could be. I'm not sure about Andy Hart would have a better sense of this, but like, is the spring football, is that just like captain's practices? Like how much?
Off-season
how many
stuff are you doing?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah,
because if it's just September through the Thanksgiving game, like, okay.
Yeah.
You can wrap your head around that.
That's
$15,000 for that?
Yeah. Seasonal.
$100,000 for that?
$100,000
big
for that.
Difference there, by the way.
It's a bit of a gap.
It's a huge gap.
it's a bit of a gap in the reporting.
Well, it said 100. It's like, well, I got paid 15. Oh. All right, well,
taxes
we'll
kill you.
Yeah.
Oh, smoked.
Rounding up. Yeah, it's taxes, chooses. That's a good point, Billy.
Maybe it was under the table.
That's
$15,000 under the table.
It's a good point.
A one-time envelope drop. There you go. You ever been paid $15,000 in an envelope? Yeah,
pop, thick envelope.
Pop by the D'Angelo's in Brockton. Slide you $15,000.
That's not how you spell citizen.
No, it's not.
Yeah. If it was really $100,000, though, I said this to Wiggy, I'd undercut him for 90.
You do it for 90?
99.
They're like, hey, guys.
I probably got to do 90. They're not going to give it to me
for 99. Jermaine Wiggins go, but we did get midday radio host Adam Jones.
They just love WEEI hosts.
That's just everybody they get to coach. Like,
yeah, they love the radio station. I don't know. We love that Brockton High School.
How did Brockton do week one post Wiggy? Because that's something like Belichick keeping an eye on Mayo. You got to imagine Wiggy's keeping an eye on Brockton.
Great point. How did they do?
Because if they didn't do great last year, but if
no,
they do well,
they didn't.
This year,
no, that's true.
What if they're like 9-2 this year? Wiggy might not get another gig.
That's kind of what we're talking about with Bill, though.
Yeah, right.
Right, but what if they're winless?
What if they go 0-for?
Yeah.
Then Wiggy doesn't look so bad.
If you're Wiggy, these are high school kids.
Maybe you bring them back like Joe Gibbs.
If you're Wiggy, these are high school kids, but right. You should be rooting for them to go winless, right?
Yes.
That's what I'd be doing.
Yeah, you have
I'd
to.
Absolutely be like,
makes you look way better.
F them kids. I'm rooting for a winless season.
I think so.
I'm rooting for a goose egg. Don't absolutely, if I'm Wiggy, no questions asked.
These kids are old enough. They're 14.
Yeah.
16.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
You can read that.
They're in high school, yeah. Definitively. And so, yeah, I think
how about this text? Channel 5 also said that Wiggy made $100,000 to coach.
Fake news.
Man, it is fake news. Hashtag fake news.
Yeah, hashtag fake news.
Wiggy's getting just dragged through the mud here.
Yeah, open.
Involved in a. He thought, hey, that year at Brockton is over. I can look behind me, but nope.
Huh.
Man, it's wild.
Open the books, Brockton.
Yep.
Open the books. I'm being told to never sing Green Day again. Text line 37937. I thought that went pretty well.
That was good.
Additionally, bring back Shine Karaoke. That was also a request.
Karaoke Tuesday was pretty big. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. So that's misleading each and every day. We revisit something from the Greg Hill Show. How much money did Jermaine Wiggins get paid by Brockton High School to coach last season? Either $100,000 or $15,000. Nothing in between.
Nope, one or the other.
617-779-7937. We have your feedback here coming up. We'll get back into Patriots and Seahawks. What's the game plan against Seattle? Can you run back the game plan from last week against Cincinnati? And what's the target number they got to score to start 2-0 against the Seahawks, who, by the way, Malcolm Butler will be in the building as the keeper of the light for that game. All that comes your way next.